and there is an opportunity for businesses to make money.
Well, that's right. And it's the same way as a little bit that started out happening with Airbnb, which was people were, and also couch surfing, where people are sharing an extra room or sharing an extra bed. And couch surfing has been hugely popular. Airbnb has been hugely popular. Although I see Airbnb as being more upscale, but definitely couch surfing. And you get to know people, you get to know the area. It's a whole different experience. So I think we'll see a lot more of those kind of things. And they're definitely setting trends that are going to educate us and lead us further down the pike towards this net zero lifestyle.
Okay, well, we've got about a minute left. And if you could maybe just rant a little bit about the idea of planned.
I never ranted planned in my
obsolescence. Planned obsolescence. Yeah. Because part of how this whole system that we live under has evolved is not only do we have throwaway homes and throwaway cars, we have throwaway everythings.
Right. Well, we throw away lots of things because they're designed to break within 6 months. And I'm not exaggerating. You can look up the term planned obsolescence. There are lots of things on YouTube and on online about all kinds of ways that we are forced to be consumers.
So essentially, we're saying that the net zero lifestyle isn't going to be a difficult transition, but it is a transition nonetheless that must take
it takes thought. It takes a lot of thought.
Well, I find that very difficult. So anyway,
I've noticed that.
You are listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke. We want to thank our producer, Adam Rich, who wins Emmys so we don't have to. And we would like to thank you for spending just a little bit of time with us. And as your grandmother hopefully told you, the secret to a happy and sustainable life is...
play nice with others, clean up your mess. And Jay, will you please eat your vegetables this week?
Grown locally. Till next time.
Mother Earth will sing and her children will be healed.
You can find more information on living sustainably in our unsustainable world at BlueRockStation.com.
Hey yo, this is Clipping. You're listening to KBOO.
Welcome to Heartland Stories Radio. Join us as host Teresa Marquez talks to experts on the future of food, farming, and public health. Heartland Stories, supporting children's health in the Heartland. Now, here's host Teresa Marquez.
Hello, and welcome to Heartland Stories. I am Teresa Marquez, and I am really delighted to be here today with Kelly Ryerson, who is an independent public health advocate, and she's also known as the Glyphosate Girl. Kelly has an MBA from Stanford School of Business with a focus on public health policy. So she is spent a lot of her life really concerned about public health. Kelly, it's really so excellent to have you with us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
We can't help. First question we have to ask is, you kind of call yourself, you use this moniker, Glyphosate Girl. What led you to use this moniker?
So it's not necessarily a name that I've dreamt of. I came around to it originally. So the only reason why glyphosates even became on my radar was because I was dealing, as many people are, with chronic disease and, you know, a kind of a vague autoimmune condition with some vitamin deficiencies, and everything was adding up to a bunch of different very odd symptoms in my body. I started feeling bad when I turned, so a decade ago, 32.
Mm-hmm.
And so it started small, and I'd had babies, and it started just with a few symptoms, and then things just kind of added on. And I was told it's because you're a new mom, you know, that will really weigh down on you, or maybe you're depressed and here are some antidepressants. And I was like, well, I don't think that that would necessarily make my eyesight, you know, a little weaker if I was depressed. There were symptoms that were showing up that didn't align with those theories that doctors were giving me. And I finally landed, actually, it became so bad that I lost my ability to walk.
Oh.
And I was in an MRI at Stanford Hospital, and I was there for 2.5 hours thinking, oh my gosh, what's going on, assuming that I was going to get an MS diagnosis. And I came out, and there was nothing wrong with me. I just couldn't walk. And I pushed further and pushed further and found that I had really severe vitamin deficiencies. And ultimately what the diagnosis was just a severe gluten intolerance that had deprived my body so much. And I was so inflamed that chronic disease had struck. So I went from that to, I went actually to Columbia University. It has a wonderful celiac and gluten sensitivity center. And I went to their conference that is for scientists because I just wanted to know more about why I was reacting to gluten so much. And a scientist stood at the front of the room who is a specialist in gluten sensitivity and said, you know, if you sterilize gluten and give it to people that have gluten sensitivity, you don't get the same inflammatory reaction as when you don't sterilize it. So there must be something else on this grain that's causing the sensitivity. And in the back of my mind, I don't know if it's from environmental working group or where, I remembered that they spray Roundup on our grains. And so I asked at the conference, and no one knew anything about it. And they said, they spray Roundup on the brain? Like, I think so. And someone from General Mills, a scientist from General Mills, was also present. Afterwards, he pulled me aside and he said, yeah, we know there's a problem with all the chemicals that are being sprayed on it, but we're going to have to entirely change our food system and sourcing. And that's a 2-decade-long process. And I was like, 2 decades? Everyone's going to be gluten intolerant by the end. 2 decades to stop spraying Roundup? So at that time, the Monsanto cancer trials, the Lee Johnson trial was beginning in San Francisco. And I actually live in San Francisco. And I thought, you know, I'm going to go up there and protest Monsanto. Now, I've never been an activist ever in any capacity. And just a public health advocate, not an activist. And so I went up with a sign in my hand to the courthouse and assuming there'd be massive protests because it's San Francisco and we're known for protests. And I was the only one, and I walked right into the courtroom and sat down with the lawyers. I was like, well, where is everyone? This is so strange. This is a huge deal. This is the first time Monsanto is going on trial in front of a jury. And there wasn't much media coverage. And so I actually quit all the other projects I was working on and decided then that I was going to be blogging every day at the trial to be sure there was a record of it, of what was really happening. And glyphosate grows. Catchy, and I really didn't give it that much thought, and then it stuck. So here I am.
So it isn't because you tested yourself and you found that you have an inordinate amount of glyphosate in your body.
No, that came later.
Yeah, because I mean, all of us. I mean, a lot of people don't realize. Just take a piece of your hair and get it analyzed, and we all have glyphosate in us.
It's so appalling. And how many people know that? Very few.
When I read about you, I was very struck that you also are super interested and involved with the idea of the microbiome and toxins and intestinal permeability. Certainly glyphosate, one of the things I bet you've learned from Dr. Benbrook was that it isn't just the glyphosate, it's also the surfactants that help glyphosate get absorbed into the crops and as well as our skin. So did that also, that awareness of the microbiome, and I'm hoping you'll tell us more about that, did that also happen while you were following the Lee Johnson trial?
So it was a little bit before that. It was around the time of this conference when I was just trying to get to the bottom of my own health that I became really, I started to follow the Institute of Functional Medicine, which is an organization that really looks at root cause and really scientific basis for the explosion of chronic disease and looking at different ways to heal from within. I learned from them that this idea of intestinal permeability is really the root cause for a lot of things. The term leaky gut is often used in place of that. And that is a situation that really creates havoc in the body. And the way that the intestine works is it's supposed to be keeping all toxins inside of the intestine and keeping them from going out into the bloodstream. And over time, different toxins, and not just Roundup, but other things too, but I think primarily Roundup, in my opinion, has gone in and really disturbed not only the gut lining in terms of the bacteria that are there, but also the integrity of the intestinal barrier itself. And so that means that little holes, effectively, are forming between the tight junctions in our intestine. They're supposed to be intact. And they allow toxins to go into the body that shouldn't be there. When the body sees, wait, there's this toxin, it launches an immune response. And now suddenly you find your body in an autoimmune-like state, which is, I think, exactly what was happening to me. And what was especially disturbing, so my vision going through the Lee Johnson trial was not only witnessing the way this chemical can absolutely cause non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, but okay, so if this is how this works on plants, as Dr. Benbrook was saying, it is the surfactant goes in and penetrates the leaf. Why is that not happening when we're eating Roundup? Of course that's happening. And to the point that the lead toxicologist, Dr. Donna Farmer at Monsanto, who is also known as, quote, the defender of glyphosate, is interviewed in a deposition and asked why they can't test the formulated Roundup product for carcinogenicity. And her response always is there's never been a long-term study on Roundup because the rats die. The animals die when they feed them the Roundup by way of the intestine. And she goes so far as to say it's a really delicate barrier down in the intestine and they can't withstand the surfactant. And so I'm sitting here thinking, does anyone else hear this? Like, I know we're focusing on cancer, but that's exactly what we have going on in our own intestines. This is why our country is so sick. We're powering through all of this Roundup every day and sending it down there to our poor intestinal mucosa. So that really, really was stunning. And I know Dr. Robin Minaj recently released a wonderful study that was many years in the making, showing the proof that indeed glyphosate, even in absence of the formulated product, is causing disturbance in the microbiome.
For our listeners who may not be familiar with the Lee Johnson trial or Lee Johnson in general, could you say a little bit about that, since I bet you know quite a bit?
Yes. So he actually is local here in Northern California. He was a school groundskeeper and used to spray Roundup, among other things, and taking care of the school campus, an elementary school. And he had two specific, very big accidents in which he became fully immersed in Ranger Pro, which is sort of the generic version of Roundup, another glyphosate-based herbicide. And he developed a horrifyingly extreme case of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And it really was devastating to see how this just wonderful man, who is a family guy, such a nice guy, in just doing his job and following the rules entirely that he was given, came down with this. And it was just very, very disheartening to see the callousness of Bayer Monsanto in the face of this, because he's just, you know, he's one case of many, many thousands that this is happening every single day. And you take out even the agricultural and food impact, just the fact, of course, that it's being sold at Home Depot still, or Target, where I had a little fit recently and had to go talk to the manager because it was there next to children's toys. It's just mind-blowing.
Well, I know that he did win the case, which was the first time, I think, ever that a case like that has been won and was awarded many millions of dollars. So anyway, through your journey, you've actually dove into some of the, you might say, effects of Roundup that a lot of people haven't been aware of. What I heard, and I'd love for you to confirm this, is that it kills all the good bugs in the gut. And that's probably why we have this leaky gut, that if we have too much of it in our gut, we're losing our good bacteria that, you know, really protects that very sensitive lining. Did I get that close?
Yes, that's exactly right. And glyphosate indeed is patented as an antibiotic, patented by Monsanto as an antibiotic. We know that it does specifically attack our good bacteria, and that's a very strange kind of antibiotic. That's not really what we like to think of with the antibiotic. It specifically attacks the good bacteria, allowing the bad bacteria to thrive. And in fact, that is something that I've discovered in myself. And I, as I've learned all of this, and I still am looking to improve my health because it's been a long journey back. I recently did a biome test, and indeed my good bacteria, even though I'm eating cleanly, just has not been able to restore itself. And so now I'm supplementing specific strains in order to recoup that. But the ones that are missing are indeed specifically the ones that glyphosate attacks, all that good stuff. And what's terrible to me too is that in the midst of all of my health issues, I was put on two different antidepressants and an anti-anxiety medication and a steroid to decrease inflammation and, you know, all of these things. And you look back and you see that a lot of our serotonin and mood stabilizing natural chemicals come from the gut. So if that gut is in a state of dysbiosis and the good bacteria is just nowhere to be found, you're not creating your own serotonin. And that really is a key problem that I guess the pharmaceutical industry has figured out. They can make some money off of selling you a few antidepressants.
Yeah, wow, it just seems so kind of backwards to say, gee, I've got, you know, some gut issues and I'm taking antidepressants.
It is amazing. And what also has been amazing is seeing just how few physicians know this to be the case. And I think part of the problem we're facing too is we're trying to, I think more and more people are indeed learning about gut health and how key it is and core it is to our overall health. But I feel that often people are needing to bring that information to their doctors. I don't think that the doctors have been educated in it by and large, Western doctors. And that is really making it hard, because I think in order to start changing the conversation, you need to have physicians on board. And that may entail changing medical school curriculum to get there.
If you're just joining us, I am Teresa Marquez, and this is Heartland Stories Radio. We're talking today with Kelly Ryerson, who's also known as the Glyphosate Girl, and she's talking about the importance of the microbiome, but also talking about how difficult it's been to work with doctors who really have a lot of knowledge on the importance of the microbiome. Kelly, you're also reminding me that, you know, when you say that there's not a lot of doctors who actually, one, are familiar with the impact of environmental toxins, but also I've always been aghast to become an MD. You don't take even one class in nutrition. So it seems like the entire medical training is all about the cure and not prevention, and is not environmental toxins are not really integrated that much, as well as nutrition. Is that what you're finding as well?
That is really what keeps me going every day, because just in my own group of friends, there isn't a single person that isn't struggling with something. It could be migraines, it could be IBS, various autoimmune conditions, hair shedding, certainly mood things during COVID. There really isn't a single person that is feeling great. That is wrong. We are not at the end of our lives. Their children's, my own kids actually had their health struggles. Their kids have health struggles. My son had ADHD and severe migraines. I put him gluten-free and on an organic diet, and now he's thriving. And you see this story over and over, but pediatricians do not, by and large, have any idea that Adderall might not be needed to treat ADHD in the child, and instead just changing the diet could do it. And in terms of my own children, I was horrified, because I actually sent my daughter, she lost a baby tooth, and I was like, oh, this is going to be fantastic. I sent it over to HRI Labs, and they do wonderful testing on, actually, they do a lot of urine testing. So they said they were willing to test her tooth to see if glyphosate was in it. And so I sent her baby tooth over there, and they found glyphosate in her baby tooth, which was formed when she was in my uterus. So that was so shocking. So to think that, you know, these chemicals don't have some significant impact on our children's health and on our health is really missing the big picture.
And do you think that it's useful for the medical institution to know that, as well as just ordinary people like you and I?
Yes, so much so. And I have a dear friend, actually, who started out as a mainstream pediatrician, and Dr. Janet Volpe, she's fabulous. And she saw these problems, and so she became a functional doctor. So she kind of has both perspectives. And she did tell me recently that more and more of her old colleagues that aren't trained in the biome or gut are starting to refer their patients over to her, because there's a tiny glimmer of maybe there's something to this nutrition and food issue and environmental toxins.
Well, you know, earlier this year, I had the honor and privilege to interview a pediatrician, Dr. Michelle Perot, and she was the only pediatrician that I've ever talked with who asks those that she's working with as an obstetrician to clean out before they actually conceive. Her idea of clean out was checking and making sure that you were not ingesting or being very, very careful about environmental toxins, and trying to clean, make sure that you're eating organic, that you're reducing all the things that all of us are carrying all the time to the lowest level that you possibly can get them, such as glyphosate, mercury, lead, dioxins. We all are carrying around even DDT still, even though it's been banned. Have you come across in your studies these issues?
Yes, so much so. And yeah, Dr. Perot has really been leading that. And she has a wonderful book, Why Our Children Are So Sick. If I could, I would be so happy to go back in time before I got pregnant and do a clean out. I didn't know anything about any of this. In fact, I was probably eating my mini Oreos quite happily. That was my favorite. I had an addiction. Probably I had like one container of mini Oreos every 3 days. And that was my preparation. God only knows like what ended up in my daughter and son as a result. This idea of clean out, I don't even think just applies to getting pregnant. I think all of us could afford a time of clean out. And you know, the levels of cancer that are rising, or even if you don't have cancer, it's like we all deserve to feel well. This new norm of, yeah, people are sick has happened. So it actually has happened relatively rapidly, but for the case of a lot of people, it's been most of their lives that we've had GMOs and Roundup sprayed all over our food. So they don't even remember a time where just these things didn't exist. And the fact that that's not alarming every politician and every doctor, back to the doctor's stories, I've gone back to my own doctors and told them about this Roundup connection and even sent some studies. And they had no idea. They had no idea that our food was covered in this. There's just no education at all on the environmental toxins.
Well, you know, I am, you know, like listening to you saying about your Oreos, and I was talking to an MD about it, and they kind of looked at me and said, look, changing your behavior around eating is the hardest thing anyone does. And I just wondered, you must have some insights into that, you know, trying to influence your kids' diets, influence your own better eating habits, watching your friends be sick and yet they just can't get away from certain chips that they love or whatever. Any thoughts about how we can approach, you know, the kind of behavior that we need to change in order to be healthy, to have a healthier microbiome?
Yeah, you know, and what's so unfortunate, as is the case with most life changes, I think, in any regard at all, is it seems that people need to hit rock bottom before they're willing to make the change. The connection, the emotional connection to food is just probably the strongest factor that there is. And I know what Dr. Mark Hyman has found is that if people can go for like 7 to 10 days on a new diet, and they start to feel at that point, oh wait, this feels pretty good. If they can get that brief taste of feeling semi-normal, that can be enough to push the change forward entirely. Then we also have the issue that I feel relatively lucky that I live in an area. I mean, Northern California is a place where people are relatively health conscious, tend to have good access to clean foods, albeit expensive. But you look at the rest of the country, and I just don't think that the availability of the organic foods is necessarily there. I don't know that, certainly it's more expensive, which is, it makes it impossible for many families to be able to buy the nice, clean things instead of the Twinkies. And so I think bringing down the price of these things just so that they're even an option at all is going to be critical to being able to make that change.
You know, Kelly, you sound really good. You sound vibrant and you sound healthy. Do you think some of the things that you're doing are really starting to work?
Yes. There's the term to make the mess your message. And I actually think that that's been a big, big, big part. Taking my mess that was really, really horrendous with all these medications and ill health, and being able to change it, not only within my body, but then bringing it to a larger scale through writing and now working on this problem of environmental toxins. And it is a long road, I will say. And you know, it started with the gluten, and I definitely got a huge boost from that. And then the organic, I got more of a boost from that. And then addressing all of my vitamin deficiencies that had occurred. I mean, I had scurvy. I had no vitamin C.
Oh, dear.
And so then I was alleviated by that. And then, and I don't necessarily think this is the correct order, but I started doing a little bit of mindfulness practice, which frankly, I found super annoying. Meditation isn't something that I don't know. I'm like an MBA business person by nature. And so it just didn't naturally fall into my scope. And now I regularly do meditation and mindfulness, and I find it so unbelievably healing. So it's really that combination, and it's day by day, and I still have setbacks, but I can say that I'm living a very vibrant, and I was able to come off of all of my medications, and that's fantastic. And so, yes, I'm a story of healing, and I really think anyone in my case, to go from not being able to walk and being so scared and being so messed up to this point now where I can go and hopefully influence a few other people to make the change so they can live their life again. It feels really good.
Well, that is a very encouraging statement that you just made, Kelly. What do you think might be a piece of advice you could give to our listeners who possibly are dealing with either their own illnesses or their relatives or their friends to, you know, start mm-hmm. the path?
So if you are feeling very sick or dealing with a sick loved one, I think that there really is a feeling of hopelessness, and particularly because I can guarantee that someone who's been sick has been told that it's all in their head. I find that to be the most frustrating thing, because you can convince yourself it's all in your head. And certainly, you know, a good attitude helps in healing. However, the avoidance of root causes as the key driver of illness is keeping you sick. So, and I would never say ignore your doctor. Certainly there are a lot of conditions that doctors can treat. But if you are told that it's all in your head, and you there's something inside of you that says, I don't think so, I think something's really going on, I'd really encourage you to keep pressing and, you know, get a few books on functional health, or just cut out gluten and dairy and see how you feel as a first step. But don't accept it as this is just the way it's going to be anymore, because that is so devastating, that feeling. And the body's innate ability to heal is phenomenal, even just with simple steps. Just, it doesn't have to be a big deal. It's simple things that can entirely change your life. So just my advice is, don't give up. Start getting information for yourself. Maybe check out some integrative physicians, or, you know, even a health coach in your area, and get better. I really genuinely think that most people can get better.
Kelly, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your path with us. And I'm wishing you the best of luck on continuing on your path. And just next time we talk, you telling me that you feel like a million bucks.
Thank you so much.
Heartland Stories Radio is brought to you by the Heartland Health Research Alliance, conducting science to enhance public health and environmental quality through food and farming innovation.
You're listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM and streaming on the web, kboo.fm. I'm Don Jacobson, and moving on, we'll be here in just a few minutes right after the news. La semana del 30.